All right.
Okay, what we have here is board time on Wednesday, 5 November at 2:43.
So we're back to review the request from Environmental Services for outside help.
Yeah, I just thought that it would be useful to have Don clarify what he's asking for.
One of the things I'd ask you is that what's the normal term of our contracts that we give? And you've explained to me that it's a different term, different time, but then they're expanded.
Well,
what was the term?
I think last fall the board approved, 22 different contracts for Director Benton and for Heath Henderson. On-call contracts for engineering services of various types, and then whatever Don needs to complete his mission. And the term of those contracts is, I think every single one of them is 2 years with 3 one-year extensions.
Now, when we give those extensions, that comes back to the board so we know that an extension was given so that we're kept in the loop as to we're extending.
When you approve those contracts, you delegated authority down to approve the extensions. Now, certainly staff can advise the board that they intend to do that.
I guess that's what I'm asking for.
Sure.
So we're kept in the loop so that we're aware. Anything to add? Share?
You were going to share about the contract, right?
Sure.
What you're asking.
Sure, I'll talk about the term if you want me to.
Sure. Talk about it, then we'll have questions.
I kind of rewrote the staff report a little bit, just made sure that it was a little more inclusive. I think the important part is the flexibility guaranteed by awarding multiple not-to-exceed agreements assures no disruption or delay when producing permit-required outreach materials and reduces the potential liability for a permit violation. So the department has had some difficulty over the last little bit meeting its deadlines for things that require graphic arts, whether it's signage or this or that, and there's been a we got a lot of departments that have a lot of needs. So we decided to put out an RFP to see if we couldn't get some folks with some of these capabilities that we could call on if needed. And I might mention that all of these are up to or not to exceed contracts. And it's $300,000 for a 3-year agreement with the ability to renew it twice for 1 year. So it's the same as the others. The others, I think we do 2 years with the ability to renew 3 years.
Yep. 5 year total.
The configuration is still the same. It's a 5-year deal.
And if it runs out of money before the 5-year period, then
the money ends at $300,000, even if we use it all in 1 year. Mm-hmm. I don't expect that'll happen. It's my understanding we may be, hiring a new county graphic artist. We'll use that person. But if they're committed or overburdened with other departments, we have the flexibility to still get our work done if we need to. Doesn't mean we're going to have to. It's up to. And what we did is we split it among three different firms that have three distinctly different capabilities. One is primarily a graphic artist who's very good at signs, who's already done about half of the work on our 30-year legacy land celebration for next year. Mm-hmm. And we're going to bring her back and let her finish that. That's the smallest one. The other two are firms, one that does web graphic artists and web support, and another that does print. And they do full-on campaigns from the letter to the media to everything. We are undertaking a major cart tagging campaign for 2015 where we're going to visit 60,000 recyclable carts in the driveway. And we need it. We're going to have a major campaign to clean up the recyclables. And a graphic artist, just a firm that has multiple talents, is one that we need for something like that. So there's three different firms involved with three different levels of capabilities, which, again, increases my flexibility to be able to draw on who I need, when I need them, to meet deadlines. Our first choice, of course, would be in-house graphic arts folks, but if they're incapable or can't get to us, I can't have that slowing down my requirement. I've got to be able to perform. And in order to perform, I've got to have the flexibility to get the expertise mm-hmm. in the area that I need it when I need it. Mm-hmm. And that's all this contract allows us to do. It was a public bid. We had several people bid on it. I think six, as
RFP.
I recall. RFP, yeah.
Different
and, well, RFP, yeah, sorry. And so six people. So my team, I wasn't on the team, but my team of folks scored those proposals, mm-hmm. and they came to me and asked me to pick these people. And I said, did you interview them? No, they just scored. I said, that's not good enough. Go back and interview them. I'm glad you scored them. That's fine. But let's interview them, have them bring their materials. I want you guys to review their materials, see what they're capable. So they did that, right? They went through that piece of the process. I asked them to go back while I was on the trade mission to Cambodia. When I came back, they were very glad that they'd done that because they learned about some capabilities that they didn't learn in the printed RFP materials. And they made this recommendation to me. It sounded reasonable to me. It doesn't cost one dime of general fund money. In fact, it's grant money, and the matching part of the grant money would be out of our solid waste revenues. So no effect on general fund money whatsoever.
And Don, are you using three different firms for different things?
Yes.
So you have three different contracts?
We put out the proposal. I think six people responded. Of those, three scored high. I said interview them all, and what they found is they each have an expertise in kind of a different area. So instead of just giving it to one, I said, why don't we increase our flexibility options and share this among the three that you thought were the best? And, oh, they thought that was great. My team thought that was a great idea because the one lady didn't need that much to finish the signs, I think 45 or 50. You see that in here.
All of them are listed right here in your document.
Yeah, yeah, those three, yeah. These are the three, Drive Marketing,
Gene
Gaylor.
Commissioners, you appear to have the previous version. It looks like, Don, you've rewritten it.
Nothing's changed except some of the nothing's changed except just some of the language about disruption and delay. And I just try to make it a little more, the dollars and the firms and all of that, the terms are all the same. I just put a little more explanation in so you understand why we need this, why we're recommending this.
These are all local firms?
I think one is out of Portland. The other two, well, maybe two are out of Portland, and one is, I don't know the answer to that, Commissioner.
Because what I was going to say, I know the county one time, Tom and them, asked for a thing to buy local, use local firms and stuff. And I know that ATCO is here and that is capable of doing probably all three of those things at the same time.
They didn't respond to the RFP.
Well,
yeah, you got to go with the people that respond, and you have to score using objective criteria.
So how's the contract going to work if you have three different firms that you're going to use?
Three separate professional service agreements.
But
three
the total of all three.
Total.
In 3 years.
Total. 300.
Okay.
And there's a 10% management reserve, and I guess that's what?
Okay.
330 then.
I think Tom, in the agreement that Don has it broken up so much for one firm, so much for the next firm, so much for the next firm.
Okay.
So when they use up their money, each firm uses up their money, it's gone.
Correct.
Yeah, and
it's
he'll decide what he needs,
right.
And he'll go to the firm that can provide what he needs.
Mm-hmm. But it's all written in here.
Correct. 67% of it would go to Drive Marketing, 20% to Formations.
Right.
And 13% to Jeannie Gaelic, a local graphic artist.
Yep.
So we may not spend any of it. I think that's unlikely. We're probably going to use some of it. Mm-hmm. But I doubt that we'll use it all. And if we do end up using it all, it'll be over a pretty lengthy period of time, at least a couple of years. I can imagine we would use all this up in a year. But it gives me the ability to get the work done when I need it done. That's the key.
Don? You have any Mark, do you have any concern about the three-year contract?
I do not, no. And and since Don and I talked about this and he clarified the other capabilities that these firms have that don't exist in our PIO office, I fully support putting this back on the agenda and
Ed?
Getting it rolling.
Ed, do you have any questions?
But you also can cancel this at any time.
Oh, yeah.
For non-performance.
We're not obligated to use it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll only use them if I want to. I don't have to use them.
Right.
Drive Marketing is a Portland firm. Formations Design is a Vancouver firm. And Gene Gaelic is a Portland firm.
So two Portland, one Vancouver.
So bottom line, you're already in communication Mark, you support putting this back on the agenda.
I do. And I apologize for the delay, Don, but We need more clarity.
Well, and we have no meeting next week.
We do not.
Anytime we need more clarity, it's always appropriate.
No problem at all. I had my folks talk to the vendors. The vendors are expecting a decision, and so they called the day after to see, hey, staff told them, oh, we just need to gather a little more information. It's going to be up for next week. Of course, we didn't realize you weren't having a meeting, so now we'll have to tell them it's been delayed yet one more week. But as long as they know it's coming, I think they'll be okay.
But you did say in-house first.
Oh, yeah. I already told Mark. I said, it's like my kids at home. If I can pay my son to do the mowing, why do I want to pay an outside? I like to keep the money in the family. Yeah. So if I can pay somebody in-house to do this work and they're available to do it, why wouldn't I? Of course.
Wait a minute.
I understand that an important part of the environmental services role is communication, education, marketing, all of that is a requirement in order to fulfill the mandates by the Department of Ecology. If we don't do that, we're out of compliance.
That's correct. Yep.
So this sets you up with the proper tools to accomplish that goal.
That's correct.
Okay. Well,
correct. This eliminates a potential liability, which is time and being able to perform on time. And I think by eliminating that potential liability, it makes the statement, we will comply,
absolutely,
a lot easier to live up to.
That is non-negotiable. Absolutely, we need
so
to stay informed.
That's why it's so important, is the flexibility to be able to get her done if we have to in a pinch is what's important.
Okay, great.
You'll make sure you come back to Mark if there's any questions at all, right?
About?
Anything that has to do with these contracts. If you come up with maybe something that you foresee, that you'll come back to Mark. You guys will have a discussion.
Contract's already there.
Well, the contracts are all spelled out already. Everything's very clear. If there's anything outside of the original RFP or outside of the contracts that you guys approve, obviously we use the same.
Put those together.
We'd come back. We'd probably put out if we find they can't do something that we need done, we'll be back up here with a new RFP and we'll be putting it out to new firms and making sure that we get people that can get the job done.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All right.
Your staff put those together.
I didn't participate in the selection team. Pete, my division manager, and his folks, the people that will be using these companies directly, are the ones
before.
That put this together, and they're not foreigners to these contracts. Yeah. And all of these contracts have already been approved by the PA's office. So they've already been up there and signed off on by the PA. So.
Great.
Okay, and you're dropping those off with Rebecca?
Yeah, they'll be ready to go. This is ready the way it is with the next meeting.
Okay, very good. Okay.
And the PA's office does a great job in making sure that we watch out for Grandma's money.
Yep. They look through it all.
Great job.
Okay, good.
Thank you, Don.
Okay. We don't have any minutes to approve this time. They weren't ready?
No, they're not. No,
okay.
No, Jennifer was out a couple days. Item number two. I would like to recommend that the board give me permission to nominate Marty Snell to a soon-to-be-vacant TIB board. That's a Transportation Improvement Board.
Yeah.
It's an agency at the state level that bestows grant monies on counties to do road projects.
So in the past, we had Commissioner Bolt on there.
Actually, this is a professional position.
What they want
is that they want a planner, and Marty's a certified.
Well, that leaves me out.
Yeah. He's a certified planner. I think it would benefit the county to be represented on that board because if they vote on giving counties money, it would be great to have at least one vote for our project.
Getting hard to get Tim money anymore, so Marty would be great.
And Marty, they meet how many times a year? You said
they meet this past calendar year. They meet every roughly 2 to 3 months.
Yep. And I think they pay travel and they pay per diem and they pay the lodging, so it won't cost the county anything other than Marty will be out of town a few days where we can go in and micromanage his department for him while he's gone.
I'm forgetting he's out of town.
Didn't Heath Henderson?
Pete Capel was on the TIB board.
Yeah, so why wouldn't
he's not a planner?
Works?
They have different disciplines.
He's not a planner.
So they have somebody from county.
If there's a public works, there's vacancy.
Oh, okay, so there's different roles, and this is that role.
Yeah,
I think there's nine different groups that have in that process.
Okay.
Yeah, and Marty's well respected in his profession, and I think he would carry great credibility to that board.
It has nothing to do with us wanting him out of town.
Okay.
So a friend of mine right now, Clay White, he's in Snohomish County.
Mm-hmm.
He's serving in that seat, and he's vacating it. So.
Okay. Great.
I'd look forward to that.
So do I have the board's permission to make that nomination?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Okay, outstanding.
So that's consensus.
Okay. That's unanimity. All right. Commissioners, the next item, I added this at the last minute today because Marty and I and Mike Selig, who's the Planet Clark guy that works for Marty, met this dynamic, energetic young lady who was introduced to us by Mike Piper, who used to be our director of community services, who actually was here when the community services health building was constructed. That was his brainchild. He introduced us to this thing called Clean Energy Works, and this is a nonprofit organization that was created with stimulus money, I think in 2008, 2009, after the recession and that big stimulus package was passed. That money has since dried up, but this group has found other sources of financing. And what these people do is they will, for free, come in to people's homes and they will do a foundation to rooftop audit of the house to, I'm sorry, I look a little disorganized here.
I know nothing's free.
They'll do a performance check. They'll check for radon to see if the house has a radon problem. And, you know, radon is a significant contributor to lung cancer among people that have high radon counts in their homes. They'll look at floor insulation. They'll look at windows. They'll look at wall insulation, roof insulation, what kind of heating and cooling systems they've got, whether or not the house would be suitable for solar. Is the house ventilated? Do you get enough fresh air coming in and out? Are there chemicals in the air because of formaldehyde and insulation? All that stuff. And they do it for free, and then they will make recommendations to the homeowner. And the homeowner, it's all in their hands. They can check box A and box C, or they can check none of them, or they can check them all. And then this company will hook them up with sources of funding, rebate opportunities to lower the cost of the improvements. They've also got lenders that offer subsidized interest rates so that people can make
their streets. What'd you call them?
Subsidized interest rates.
Oh, I thought dentures rates? We don't have those.
a lot of that goes through the PUD.
Yes, and they have been to the PUD.
Through Clark PUD.
Yep.
Big and time. And this is similar to that package that I give you with the light bulbs and all of the stuff that I give you
same
about
outfit.
A month ago or so.
Same company, same outfit. Yeah.
So what they've got a partnership with the city of Seattle. They have partnerships over in Oregon, and what they'd like to do is partner with the county because, you know, Marty has a program that's like this that Mike Selig...
Build Green?
Well, it's a combination of Planet Clark and then the energy efficiency program, weatherization program.
Yeah, that came over...
It's income qualified, so if you make certain, you know, over a certain amount of money, you're not going to qualify for the program, but this is something that anybody could use this resource and get this whole house audit and then make a choice.
So what ends up happening is their energy bills are reduced, their living environment is made more healthy, and here's the real thing. Since they began doing this in Oregon, they've done 3,800 new home energy upgrades. Total cost of which was $71 million. 35 prime contractors and 200 subcontractors got in on the action. Workers receiving paychecks as a result of this program, 1,419. New construction hires, 438. New jobs in the pipeline, 100. Average wage, $21.39. They require the contractors that participate to pay prevailing wage.
Just for the contract, because they have the freedom to be able to pay.
Yeah, if it's this work, they have to pay prevailing wage.
Why are they paying prevailing wage? It's not for government. Prevailing wage, I thought, was for government projects.
Well, the deal, sir, is that they require contractors to pay prevailing wage. The contractors don't have to bid on this work. They don't have to be a selected contractor.
Union scale.
If they don't want to pay prevailing wage, they just don't participate in the program, that's all. So, project dollars earned by minority and women-owned firms, $6.4 million. Formerly unemployed new hires from the public workforce system, 88. And veterans working on projects, 37. So not only is this good for the people in the county that would like to participate in the program, but it's an economic generator.
Yep. So why wouldn't we participate?
Well, I have an answer for that question.
So what is our part of participating?
We just simply link up with them. There's no cost to the county. We introduce them to using Marty's outreach. We just link to their website on our website.
So one a couple
do,
of things
do publicity
us,
things.
Yeah, it's a lot of it's you know just partnering with us in our work with the building industry with the Planet Clark, NHB. So they gave us some kind of sample press releases where they've worked with the city of Ashland, Vista, which you might know of. It's the
east of the mountains, right?
East of the mountains in southern Oregon. They have talked to Clark Public Utilities, and that's one of the questions I asked. If we did some kind of media release, I'd like to get the CPU's little tag on it. And they kind of want to launch their presence in Clark County January 1st. And if we have opportunities, events with Building Industry Association and Planet Clark, we would just basically have this information available for people if they're interested in something like this.
Yep.
So are we the first entity in Clark County that they're approaching on this side of
than Clark PUD?
They're already working with PUD, or they're approaching PUD?
They've approached PUD.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, sure. I haven't heard any reasons why there'd be any reservations at all.
I just wonder why they need us.
They just want to partner with us for the referrals.
We can help get the word out, and we can say that we have a program for low-income people that's just like this. Or very similar to it, and this is for people whose incomes are too high to qualify for Marty's program, but these services are available to you. And
I become a little bit concerned for the legality portion of it, or the implication that we have endorsed them, and if people come back and say, well, you county could be somewhat responsible.
I'm glad to go through the agreement and make sure that we don't take on any responsibility for the mere fact that we allow their name to be put out there as somehow being endorsed by the county. So we're glad to take a look at that and keep that in mind.
It's just like a private-public partnership.
Well, one of the things I get concerned with, if we recommend a business to go out there, Then we
play no part in the selection of contractors at all.
So are there other people that do the same thing? And if they do, they're going to come to us and say, we want equal time. We want on your website also. So we need
maybe
to be aware
of that. The PUD offers certain things that can be done in the home with using some of their rebates and some of their energy credits. So it's kind of partnering with them.
But there's a liability part here. We can't advertise for one and not the other. And if we promote anybody, we could become somewhat liable if they say, well, you recommended him to us.
Certainly it depends on how that all takes place. But, yes, there could be a responsibility based on that.
Okay.
And we'd be careful about that. The other thing is, to the extent of providing a public service, the fact that there's private entities that are not, let me re-say that. To the extent somebody is providing a public benefit, and especially if they're a nonprofit, and that you would allow them an opportunity, you might not allow a private for-profit competitor, is distinguishable and defensible. And so I don't know enough to know, because I heard this for the first time just as you have. But we can look at that. We have done things, and certainly we use, for example, Reichert is a good example, because they've had a long-standing contract with the county to provide energy upgrades in people's homes who don't have sufficient income, and we've renewed those contracts. So they had this relationship, and as a result, they get I'm sure they get private business because they're known.
Yeah.
We can have those kinds of relationships without running afoul of the law. Well, what I will do is, as this goes forward, assuming the board blesses it as a potential partnership, we'll look at that and certainly we'll advise you accordingly.
Yeah, the indicator was that we're going to give a government wage.
Well, yes and no. Some of their funding may come from the federal government. If it does, it's very common for the feds in the state to include a requirement. So let me propose it as grant funding.
Yeah.
Let's assume they have a share of their money that comes from grant funding. It's not uncommon at all for the state to say, if you're receiving public money, then this is a public work, and therefore it you have to pay prevailing wage. And that is, by the way, the reason we require our energy upgrade contracts to be paid out at prevailing wage right now, currently. So we can find out the answers for you.
Right, Reichert, for example.
Yeah.
It does prevailing wage.
Yeah, they have.
And I just had a meeting with them last week on this subject because they're competing with folks that aren't getting a prevailing wage because some of the vendors aren't requiring it. And what he said was, but not the county. They do a great job of implementing the program the way the state requires them to. But that's not true for some of the other people that are doing these weatherization jobs.
Well, the thing of it is, Mark read a whole list of hundreds of contractors that have benefited from this, not just one particular contractor.
Yeah.
They've lent out to a whole lot of different people.
Yeah, everybody wins.
Everybody
our
wins.
Department has partnered with
I think
Mike
we have an agreement.
Okay.
On the trailer.
It's in your hands.
And this is something we've been...
I'll provide you the advice. I don't sign up.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And so bottom line, we have consensus on that. Yeah. And Chris, if it passes the Chris test... And it always does. So if you're involved, then certainly you cover those bases and yeah, buy in.
That's a great program.
Okay.
I'll certainly look at it
Thank
and
you,
I'll
Chris.
Provide the board a response.
Sure. Thank you.
Okay. Item 1.4. I've come to understand that we may have some difference of opinion on advisory boards and whether or not we interview every member of every board or just a select few. So I'll turn it over to the two that might be having this discussion so that staff can...
We were trying to standardize our involvement. So anytime that they come to us with an advisory board to one of the county where the county is involved, we want to know who they were because at the end they always came down and said, here, we want your blessing on these people. So one of the things that wasn't being clear was as advisory boards or commissions that we are going to make that decision. And so if we're going to make that decision, we would like to see all those people voluntary. Is that right?
I don't think we're not doing is changing anything. I think we had this conversation about a year ago. We just standardized the process. And we just want to, I think it was written down at that point. And I assume that you still have a copy of that, and we're just simply following that.
Okay, I thought there was a distinction, that if the an advisory board provides advice directly to the Board of Commissioners, you want to interview them and participate in the process. If the advisory board doesn't provide advice directly to you, that maybe you don't.
If they provide advice to...
Well, they may advise
the county,
a director, or
like the Clean Water Commission, or do they?
Actually, they're an advisory to the board.
Okay, so that would be
a bad example. But SWAC, Solid Waste Advisory Commission, they advise both the director and the board. There are other advisory boards that only advise the director, and some advise like the Planning Commission or whatever.
Right.
There are advice boards out there that don't advise you guys;
right.
They advise
the
your employees.
I think the DEEB advises the board, as well as the Planning Commission.
So,
because of the complexity of that, is the reason we wanted to standardize.
Well,
because they were all coming to us, no matter who they were advising, and wanting us to sign off on their
appointments. So far, I've been comfortable with the way we've been doing with the interviewing, the way we've been doing it. I think it's been great.
Yeah.
Well, yes, and I think the way it's been working and the way it should continue to work, I expect, is who, if they give advice to the commissioners, that commissioners ought to be interested enough to participate in the process, to get to know them, to be able to help in a role of interviewing them. And if they are serving someone else, that we would be inappropriate for us to be able to somehow dictate or participate in a process that's outside of our own sphere. So it really has to do with that list of advisory boards that we now have a web page that lists them all out alphabetically. I would think that one of the key fields that ought to be listed, included in that, would be who do they serve? Who do they advise? If they advise, and that if it's not already clear there, we ought to add that, mm-hmm. because in that, then we have a very clear direction as who would be the appropriate ones to participate in their selection.
So if they advise our staff, we should know what our staff is being advised of because we're the policy maker. So we're right back to where we were, to where we're back interviewing and making that appointment.
The process that we go through, if the commission or if Mark notifies Jennifer that this is the policy of the board, this is the group of people we want to interview or the ones we don't want to interview, she's going to mark it on those sheets that she currently gives out to us with the list that with all those different candidates in there,
yeah.
and then says to the commissioners, do you want to interview these folks, or if you don't, are the ones that are already served on the boards that have been...
Yes, in other words, it ought to be a very straightforward, well-defined process.
Yep.
And why don't we do this? Why don't we just simply take that first step and identify whom do they serve? And just add that to that list of advisory boards.
Okay.
And then we'll look and see, what does that tell us? And then we have some insight that will guide us from that point.
So when you do that, you're going to remove from our eyes someone who's advising our staff.
Well, here's the reason I think what I'm suggesting is just the first step. The first step is just to add to that list, whom do they advise? Once we have that list, then we can bring it back and we can
determine,
say,
you
know, this is really policy related, even though they're advising for a different entity. We can at least talk about it at that point. This just gives us the insight to be able to know what we're dealing with, because we want to keep it really simple, keep it standardized, and right now we don't know
even
the mix.
We're starting over if we do that.
Well, we're just simply solving the equation with adding the next turn.
We're starting over.
Let
me give you two examples. One is the Civil Service Board.
We
appoint them. I understand they advise the sheriff. But all the county employees used to be under civil service. And now, for some reason, they advise, I'm told, the sheriff. But yet all of our employees are still under civil service and collective bargaining. Why do we have civil service?
Well, that would be really good for us to be able to look at each one of these.
Okay.
And
let me go back
plans.
And talk about it.
Yeah.
Railroad Advisory Board.
Commissioners, if I could interject too.
Yes.
The proposed charter, if it passes, also addresses the responsibility for board appointments, and a lot of those that responsibility
yeah.
will go to the county manager.
It specifies exactly.
So you might want to wait a week and see if that's going to pass for sure, and then
we have several that's coming up before the end of the year that we need to take care of. So I think between now and actually we have 2 months, I think we'll just go ahead and do interview it and appoint.
Interview them all.
Don't start all over.
Well,
we'll still be working out the policy when our administrator takes charge.
Well, we certainly don't want to hold up the process. So if there's some homework to do that would enlighten us better in the future, then we would do that. In the meantime, we just simply facilitate the process with the standardized form we already ended up with.
Some of the things we need to know who the incumbents are and if they desire to run again.
When they have a vacancy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. When their position comes up. And recommendations. The Railroad Advisory Board had some recommendations we didn't know about here about a year ago, and they were upset when we didn't.
Actually, if I could refresh your memory, they
they thought that they had the ability to just do it themselves.
Yeah, I know.
And they,
I remember.
And we corrected that notion.
Yeah.
And then it went a different way.
Yeah, sure. So.
I do like the idea, or really encourage us to find out whom do they advise, because in this transition that's ahead of us, we'll have to sort out, are they policy making? Do they contribute to making policy, or do they contribute to helping to tune up a process? So that first step would be necessary to kind of take inventory.
That's Mark's problem.
Right. If the current situation holds, these are the three bodies that the Board of Commissioners participate in, and concurrent authority with the county manager. I have no idea what that means.
Yes, and those are just three.
If you need help, because we're also giving you our cases now, because we don't go directly to the director of the department.
Correct.
So you might need some help in that. So you might want to reassign that back to us.
We actually have about 20, and the 20 are listed.
Right.
And so there needs to be a definition there. So
Well, this is one of the things we have to talk about, because it's fairly clear here that.
That's clear. We understand that.
Yeah. We'll get readdressed in January.
Yeah.
All right.
Can I just say one thing about advisory boards? I found that in reviewing ours in our department, that some of them are off kilter in terms of timing. Mm-hmm. For example, the Clean Water Commission. Their charge is to prepare an annual plan. But what happens is their vacancies come up in March. The annual plan is already underway by the current board. I would like to bring to the board at some time soon a proposal to change the timing of the appointment so that the full Clean Water Commission can be on board by the end of the year, say December 31st, so that they can all hit the ground running at the same time. Because it disrupts their work to change three or four of their members out in March and April after they've already started down. Because their charge is an annual charge. Mm-hmm. And then they present their findings at the end of every year to you guys. Mm-hmm. And so it'd be best if they could do that, say, in December, mm-hmm. and then you'd have it. And it delays it.
Mr.
So
Administrator, are you paying attention to this?
The timing of the appointment is important to some of those boards based on their work plan.
But you know, Don, there's a whole bunch of things that they also were looking and assigned to go forward and look at other projects.
Right.
And so on. So not everything starts at the beginning of the year.
All right. I just mentioned that in some of mine. I've noticed the way it's laid out in the county code. Yeah. It would function more smoothly if those appointments could be made 3 months earlier than they're made now.
The other problem that we had staff was running our commission, and they were doing staff's direction instead of their advisory position. And I think we've got that somewhat resolved. So
that doesn't happen on our
list. Just to follow through on the point that you just made, Mark, when you go through these lists, being that we've had one by one over a period of many, many years on some of these, advisory boards were created, and they've kind of inherited them, and it's been a long time since we took inventory and asked basic questions like, who do they advise? And are the terms the right length, and do they is the appointment time appropriate? So that's a really good opportunity to look at each one of these and say, well, maybe it's the time for a little bit of a tune-up, and then you can suggest how better to improve them. It's all part of the inventory process.
Okay. All right. Moving on.
Commissioner
report, Mr. McGill. I mean, Barnes.
I'm looking at you, and
I'm calling you Mr. McGore here. Okay, Mr. Barnes, your turn. We were supposed to have a request, Doug Lasher, to come up and talk about disclosure of properties. Is he available?
He's out of the office all day today.
Oh, okay. We'll reschedule that.
I've been down here twice to congratulate him.
That's what he is.
Yeah, and Peter Van Nortwerk is pulling signs out of the ground.
He's cleaning up his mess.
Yeah, I went down to congratulate him, too. But so I'll make a point of getting him here next week.
That's great. Mr. Barnes.
You two have talked to this individual this morning.
What is
that? Oh, yes, uh-huh.
And where are we going to go with that?
Peter is heading this up. He's going to shepherd it and make sure that what this is Monet's garden.
I already contacted Heath Henderson and asked him the basic question. Why are we purchasing the property off all the established built homes instead of off the rural side of the road? I think there was an answer to that as to why we may or may not be able to do that.
And Peter and I met with them today. And Peter's working with staff to
with
the representatives from the Monet's
Garden.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I met with them too after you guys met with them.
So, Mr. Neighborhood Citizen
we'll
Champion.
Follow up with that. There's several things going on out there.
So, he'll work with staff to be able to get the definitions, see if there's some way that we can make improvements, and then bring it back.
Okay. Having built power lines, usually you go down the side of the road where the power lines are not. And we're going down the side where the power lines are and the backyard. And it's unusual. And the other thing that they had a request was to use 77th instead of the curved road.
Yes, there is a proposed road on the Clark County Arterial Atlas that goes through their subdivision to connect 83rd Street, which extends to the west.
Yeah.
And so they do have some concerns about that. But at the same time, along with the rezoning and the removal of the urban holding last year, the development area out there, they proposed a master plan area that did not include the use of that proposed road.
You're right. And it did not.
So there's a couple things to consider, and maybe their plan is to appeal to the planning department to remove that proposed road from their area.
I think that's what they
said. It was put in holding because of the growth wouldn't address the need for the infrastructure.
Right. There's some of the traffic impact, but they master planned the area out there. They actually did their own and paid for their own traffic impact study. And they did not include that proposed road in that traffic impact study. So there's a lot of things that have gone on. But then we did our own traffic impact study this year on that proposed road and how that would affect the traffic out there. So.
And I understood that we were going to make improvements on Ward Road instead of Mill Plain, in lieu of Mill Plain.
Fourth Plain.
Okay. And do the cut through with plans of cutting through the second part of the growth, which is referred to as the Bolt property.
Okay. So there's more details to find out.
It would line up with parallels it.
Mm-hmm.
So because they want to put traffic control devices or something at the intersection, and the current alignment's too close to the bridge.
Yeah. So they never got there.
Yeah. So they were going to jog to the west.
They never solved that problem, and it was, that's when they referred to 77th and Ward Road to meet the infrastructure needs for the development. And the development is supposed to happen gradually.
That's right. And they also changed the parcel sizes to create a graduated reduction in parcel size.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Randy Prince, I think.
Yeah. That's next to Monet's garden. Yeah.
And he can answer a lot of questions for you, too.
Yeah, a number of times. And part of the issue was getting the county in the business of condemning property. The neighborhood was real concerned that we're condemning property to facilitate private development.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were walking carefully just to make sure that we were evaluating what is public responsibility and looking at that with some, detail or in detail.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
So the way it is right now is that staff is just simply following the specifications. And the lines are drawn, the urban growth boundary is drawn right there. And what we can do is gather the input both from the citizens as well as the staff to see if there be a smarter solution so that we can, if that line should be moved a little bit in order to make everybody successful,
thing that they were doing, that planning was doing, was changing the status of those roads from a rural collector to an urban collector because it's now inside the urban growth boundary, and that's appropriate.
And they have to,
but what they didn't fully consider was the impact to the neighbors, because that change in collector also included a 10-foot wide right-of-way requirement or specification.
The engineer on that job was not available when I met with the people. Mm-hmm. So we brought up another engineer and shared some more information and more questions for us to ask for that engineer.
I would suggest that instead of each one of us working on this individually, that everything gets passed to Peter and let him head this up. And then if there's anything that can, after he gathers all that stuff together, he can bring it back to us so that we can help.
Well, one of the things I found in the conversation with him, they hadn't talked to Mr. Bolt or any of the landowners where the bare land's at. They didn't want to do that. But it seems like to me, if I was in a neighborhood where there was a problem that I didn't want somebody to take the frontage out of my property and there was available land next door, I'd be over there talking to them, getting a written agreement out of them to make sure that they would agree to give the 10-foot right-of-way on both sides of that property in a simple way. And that, and they finally, it clicked on them both in there this morning that maybe they screwed up a little bit by not.
You screwed up by not talking to Randy Prince.
Right.
Randy Prince already has construction agreements in place. We'll find out what those are.
Right. So, anyway.
Okay.
The other communication that I got, and I don't know whether, I think all the commissioners got it, the gentleman complaining about grave markers and Christmas trees being decorated along the county right-of-ways and stuff like that. I think that when I was on the commission,
that could be Don's department.
a big flap about that, and I think the legislature changed the law, and I think there is a law that restricts how these grave markers. I think you guys did it, and I think Tom was there too when they did it. That restricts what they can put in the right of way. Yeah. Christmas trees that are distraction or grave markers that might be distraction to people driving the. It causes accidents. So I know there's a state law that you guys put into effect.
I don't remember it, but there is. I don't remember the standards.
So I think you need to...
Yeah, maintenance of the right-of-way is a Heath Henderson thing.
Yeah, you need to look that up and notify this person that whatever the state law is, that because he's harassing some people that...
I don't know if we follow state law.
Yeah, I think it is a state
law. Do we follow state law, or we complain about the county roads? And maybe we have our own standard. If we don't, we might consider... adopting.
Well, I think one of the things that brought this to a head too was Mr. Riley when he lost his son down on the St. John's,
coming down St.
John's.
Oh, the motorcyclist?
Going up the hill, he lost his kid, lost the Mustang that he was driving, and for months they had this big cathedral built there, and everybody was looking at it, and it was causing accidents, so I think that was part of it that
sounds
brought
like
the thing to a halt.
There are two on 29th Avenue when I drive home.
Yeah.
I drive home a different way now that 139th Bridge is in place. But the kid was hanging on to a car riding a skateboard and got run over by the car. And so his mother continues to maintain a shrine right there by the signal. And it's in the right-of-way.
No, we had to move that, though, because I know that particular
person.
Pete Capella and I had to work with her in putting something away from the right-of-way.
Well, this is a good time to talk about prayer in high schools. I don't know if we keep prayer out of the high school, and then
the other one is,
and then Marysville filled the high school
State Association
of prayer,
County.
So.
They want the commissioners to vote on candidates for all these different offices, but they.
I haven't looked at that. I saw that.
But they're supposed to be putting it online, but I didn't know whether the chairman voted for the commission or if the individual commissioners vote.
I think we each vote.
I was giving it to Mark now to check into it for us to see.
You open up.
So it just arrived today.
You got your access there.
Yesterday.
And you open up and use that access number, then you can see who's there.
I don't have one. They haven't sent it to me. They haven't sent anything. That's the only thing I've got so far.
Well, it says today you will receive an email, and that was yesterday. Did you get an email?
Nope.
Did you get one, sir?
I haven't looked.
So voting for...
It could be there.
But they have a time limit to vote.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is?
It's... I know
through
we're
the 20th.
Okay.
And they're looking for, they have a whole bunch of open spots there. I feel a little guilty about not taking on some of that responsibility, but I think right now we have our plate full. I don't know. You're still with the Ledge Committee, mm-hmm. with WASAC. We used to have Bolt. I don't think we have anybody on the CRAB board, I guess is what it was that Commissioner Bolt was on. It's important to participate in the CRAB board and TIG yep. board because we get lots of money that gives us matching funds to do our projects. And right now we have a lot of money and no matching funds. And it'd be nice to see what the state can
do. Well, we got the TIG board covered. What about the CRAB board? Do we have somebody?
Well, they're different positions.
I don't know.
They have a planner position, but then they have a commissioner position.
And for the CRAB board?
Yeah.
And the TIP board, too. There are different.
Yeah, there are different yeah. professions that are represented.
Maybe later on we'll look at it.
Can you find out?
Yeah, sure.
Thank
can.
You.
The well, state legislature delegates to both CRAB and TIP big chunks of money that they then dole out. So it's important to have representation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, they're wonderful.
As long as you're giving the money, they're wonderful.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was important we
good point.
Share our due diligence. Take
yeah.
The other thing is that in the NACO. Stuff that the newspaper they send out. There's a thing in here, and I would like to recommend to the other two commissioners that maybe you look at this, and that since our transportation guy has done such a tremendous job, that I think that that he needs to find out about transportation infrastructure throughout the other parts of the United States. I would propose that maybe we look at sending him to that convention.
Who him that?
Heath.
So oh,
Heath Anderson.
Is that for that yep. position or is that for yep. a commissioner position?
Yep.
Is that for a commissioner position?
No,
so
it's
you're
going to
find out about
for,
that.
It's for somebody that. It's for somebody to delegate, or you could send a commissioner.
Yeah. There's the CRAB board member. We do not have anybody on it. Although there is a Milky on the board.
Yeah,
there is.
We're doing our part. We're doing our part.
Okay. But I do think that that's worthwhile, David and Tom, that the. Since our transportation person is working
well, you
so
know,
well.
I think it's important to have a policy yep. person yep. there.
Right. So,
well, this is land use development, economic opportunity, right. quality of life. So, yeah.
So, and Mark's going to look into it and yep. see if there be any openings.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else?
That's it.
That's it? Oh, my goodness sakes. I'm just looking at some follow-up on some things that we were working on. I think I understand that we have scheduled on our consent agenda the panhandling.
It's a hearing on the 18th.
And, real old business.
Got a big agenda on the 18th.
Yes.
You know, the real, real old business. And there's some other stuff being done with the Bolin property. We call it the Bolin property on Highway 99
right.
by the bridge. And we were looking at a siding over to that, a different way of doing it rather than just giving
right, granting a yeah. license to it. And I've already been in contact with Pam Mason. The only thing that may be holding that up, quite frankly, is I was asked to go out and look at the amount of area that can include and meet there with Heath. And quite frankly, I have Cressa radio contract, your Tidemark contract, and the RFP for our bond council that are taking priority. So I should be done with, or I should be okay by next week to be able to make some time.
Sounds good to me.
Okay. I just wanted to let
Chris
you know.
Chris has got
I just
plenty.
Don't want you to
I've
forget.
Forgotten it.
I just want
Commissioner, his office is on the third floor. You might take a look at his desk.
Do we have a key for that floor?
I know. I was down there earlier today, and we added one more thing to this, the RSN contract.
Yeah, and I'll.
Peter, do you have anything?
I just have one thing I want to make you aware of. We've been working on implementing your implication policy for the last couple of years. This is a letter inviting the congregations to participate in that, which
oh, yeah.
we revised the letter. Holly participated in doing that, okay. so you can thank her for the wonderful language. One significant change we did make on this is the old letter asked them to respond in writing, and we're
oh, yeah,
asking them
remember.
To call
okay.
or email us just okay. to facilitate contact.
Very
plus, when you have to schedule somebody, you're going to have to talk to them in person anyway.
Great.
So why don't we bring this back next week, and that way we can have a time to comprehend
okay.
it and
a chance
and
to read it.
Yeah.
Okay. That's it.
unless there's something else you'd like an update on that you want to work on.
No, I don't have anything to date. I guess I'm still on. Railroad crossings. Axel's not here. We've been getting some emails and some correspondence from more people looking for silent zones. And all of a sudden we heard from an individual from that same area that we were working on. And the last thing I recall that I sent back to him and emailed all you guys on or included you in the CC was that we were going to go back and make sure that they had an HOA association that could sign a contract of agreement to pay for the arms that we would have to put down. Axel has all the information. So we'll, I guess we'll address that again next time. The individual that contacting us isn't concerned about $150,000. Our concern was that we didn't have an entity to step up and sign the paper.
Yeah, because originally when we worked on this, because Axel's worked on this for a couple of years, we went through a long process with the railroad identifying the right-of-way and trying to make sure that we could put infrastructure to keep people from going over the double yellow line and going around these, and so we had to median and put curbs up, but we found out we had right-of-way issues there, and there's sight distance problems, so and so you started having to look at more expensive alternatives, and that's when it brought in to question who's going to pay for these ones, and that's when we went back to the neighborhood, because they originally weren't willing. Now it sounds like they may well be.
I didn't know that. That's part of it. I didn't know, I guess.
I think when we went back and started talking numbers with them, people got scarce.
Okay.
But
my correspondence back to him was we thought we could do it for $20,000, and when it shot up to 150 plus, we had to step out because we didn't have funds to do that. So it was back in their ballpark. So when Axel gets back, I'll bring him up to speed on that.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay. The other thing that has come up is kennels, dog kennels. And I kind of got caught off guard. You know how so many times staff would come in and give
us a... You caught me off guard.
Well, give us the book. And they put it down on the desk. I said, "Oh, that's kennels." So I wrote down kennels on it and put it up on my rack. Well, this is something that the people from this, and we talked about it one time on ordinances. What was our intent? And our intent at the time, my understanding was, is that we haven't had any problem with those people less than 5 acres, and we'd probably grandfather them in, and still ask them to come into compliance. And I thought things were all quiet. And then I get this staff comes in and says, they've been in court. They've been corresponding with us. They even gave us a book, a red book. I said, well, I have a red book. And here it is. So apparently this kennel is having problems. And it's more dense than what I thought it was. And it's been to it. They missed a date in which to appeal, and I just wanted to bring you guys up to speed with it, and also asking staff was, did we put intent in there having to do with existing kennels? And the intent was, my understanding was, that we would allow it to exist on less than 5 acres because they were already there with no complaints. And so, therefore, they would come into compliance with our regulations.
Just to give you what's called the procedural posture of the case, what happened was they applied, they were granted a permit. The applicants, the Von Shipmans, were not satisfied with the permit condition, so they appealed it, and the neighborhood also appealed it.
A neighbor.
Okay, I'm sorry, neighbor. Also appealed it. It went to the hearings examiner, and then the hearings examiner disagreed with staff and denied the project based on the fact that the projects in existence or operating, he said, to be protected, to be, in the law they use the term vesting, to be vested, they had to have been lawfully operating, which is what our code is almost exclusively based on. And he said they don't have any proof they've ever been lawfully operating. And so he denied the permit, and they never appealed it. So there was no ability to do anything, to reconsider, to look, to change, to do anything. The appeal time ran, and this is a final decision. So short of amending your code, there's not much else that can be done with this project. They went through a process. They had a full and fair opportunity to be heard. They didn't take advantage of an appeal opportunity, and the neighborhood is waiting for something to happen. In fact, they've been in contact with code enforcement about when are you going to make them come into compliance, because they don't have a valid permit, and they never appealed this. So,
well, can we make it a wine tasting? Put it in a wine ordinance.
This might
okay,
be the, might
I,
be the
I appreciate that because
yeah, sure.
I was getting bits and pieces, and she was calling up, and then I was told about the book, and here's all the correspondence and stuff, and I haven't had a chance to go to it. I was thinking that it was all new, and it's not. So it's something that they were given the opportunity to grandfather in by coming into compliance, and when they didn't do that and they didn't meet the appeal, they missed the chance. Is that correct?
Well, it's a little more than that, but that's certainly part of it. They, as I said, the examiner held them to the standard of being lawfully in operation rather than just being in operation, and there may have been a question that the board could have clarified, but once the decision is final, and you lose your chance to appeal, you're sort of done.
And what you're saying, Chris, is that the board ought to say, you're out of here.
Well, I think the examiner already did it for you. We charged him with the obligation of interpreting our code. I'm sorry?
Why wouldn't they appeal it? It doesn't make any sense.
I have no idea. They contact, well, go on.
I talked to Kelly Shipman and said, you know, you have this decision, you have there are two avenues. One is that you can file a motion to reconsider it with the examiner, in which case he has this chance to clarify his decision or amend his decision. After that, then you have 21 days, I think it's 21 days, to file a land use petition act in court. So she has file a motion to reconsider to the examiner, and then the second avenue is court. I don't think she did either. In which case, this decision dated September 22nd of this year, it's a final decision. The crux of her issue was the language that the board adopted, and we knew that there were some kennels out there. I'll call it that. They were less than 5 acres, so we said that commercial kennels that have been in operation since April 15, 2011. May be approved on less than 5 acres, provided that they fully complete an application and submitted by August of 13. So they applied.
Had she done everything she was supposed to do, she could be in operation, even though she's less than 5 acres.
What you have is you have a difference of opinion about what in operation means between you and the examiner. The problem is because they never appealed it, they took away the opportunity for anybody to clarify that.
Yeah. But, I mean, from what you said, that tells us the intent that we would accept less than 5 acres if they come into compliance, and they didn't do that.
And I said, you know, if you talk to the commissioners, it's just to clarify what their intention was, but this isn't a legal proceeding. You have to file a motion to reconsider or file in the court.
And she didn't do either.
Was the appeal super expensive?
I don't. I think in court it's not that much.
She missed. I understand there's an appeal that she missed too.
Doesn't make sense.
Probably in court.
Yeah,
the 21-day loop of appeal. Yeah.
So, if she was to go anyplace at all, would she go back to court on an appeal and hope they would overturn the appeal that she didn't turn up at?
No, because our code says that the appeal, or once you fail to appeal, the decision is final, and you can't do anything. You can file a new application, but even at that, you can't. Our code prohibits you from filing a new application for a year. Unless something changes in our code, she's done. I mean, that's the final decision.
That was the hearings board, right?
Or hearings
was
examiner.
That a court?
Hearings no, examiner. Hearings examiner.
Now, in the past, boards have overturned hearings examiner decisions.
Well, when you were...
I'm not crazy about bragging that they did that. I don't think we probably should not. In fact, that's the reason we made the ruling to separate us from that.
Exactly. You're not in the business of hearing appeals anymore. You got out of it intentionally.
Yeah, it put us in a bad light, and we made... Not we.
Well, we had a notifier that
there was
she has to go by the law.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, great. Yeah. What I need to do, I can call her back and give her the good news.
Are you done with your stuff? I did have one issue.
We don't do do-overs. Okay, I'm done. You have do-over.
Are you? I do think that the board needs to have Oliver come in and have a con. I get tired of seeing Oliver beat up almost every meeting in there, and I think the guy is trying to do what we've instructed him to do. He's trying to follow the law. He's trying to follow all the rules and regulation. And that, and I understand the two ladies' frustrations. I get all our communication right, but I think he needs. I think he feels like he needs maybe that the board is not. In my opinion, I think he feels like maybe the board is not really behind him 100%.
So I talked to Mark about that a little bit, and I've tried to get a better understanding when he came up and testified, and maybe Mark needs to go talk to him again. We do support him, but I was kind of under the impression after talking to him at one point was that we're in a time frame to get the EIS submitted, and that time frame is we're up against. So I don't think we're out there taking input for it as much as we are sharing where we are. Now, that's something we need to ask Oliver because I didn't understand his answer.
Well, we are taking commentary from the public. It's being entered as part of the record.
So we can make change?
Not the change they want us to make, but we can make changes if they're proper and appropriate.
And, you know, I kind of told the ladies afterwards when they came up that maybe what the change that they're referring to is something that we wouldn't necessarily make on this comprehensive plan.
What I was going to say, Tom, is, too, I got a list from Oliver. I asked him if you'll remember public comments. Furnish me a list of all of the public comments that's been made in these meetings and stuff.
Commissioner, I think he actually emailed it to all of you.
Well, I give it. He didn't. They didn't get it. He mailed it to me, so I went. I went and give you guys a copy of it. I give Peter a copy of it and Axel a copy of it.
My guess is the majority of the things that people want us to do, by state law, we can't do.
Right.
And maybe he hasn't made that clear to them because they're saying, well, you're not taking into consideration what I'm saying. Well, we are. We just can't do under law what you want us to do.
But if you read a lot of these comments that were made publicly in the comments that have been emailed to him, they're supporting you, Tom. They're supporting what he's saying. So there's a mixed bag in there, but you have to look at what...
Saying the same thing and don't know it?
Yeah, right. So you have to look at that list that's 4 or 5 pages long.
Commissioners, if you would like, I don't have any problems. In fact, I spent quite a bit of time with Oliver in two areas, actually three. One having to do with space where the meeting is held. Two having to do with amplification because there were concerns about that. And three about tape recording. I think it's important to tape record these meetings for a lot of reasons. Number one, so you have a good record. Number two, people are a little more civil when they know they're being recorded. And it's easier to go back at that and make sure you've answered their questions. Sometimes, exactly what you said, Commissioner, happens, which is they ask this question and you answer this question and you're talking across each other and nobody knows. You think you've answered it and they don't think you did. And you just miss. And if you have a tape, you're better able to assure that you're really answering the question they've asked. Yeah. And I'd like to go to the next meeting that they have to just help out because, Commissioner, you're exactly right that at least some of the things that are asked have to do with legal lots and why can't I have a lot? I've had this all this time and I've been paying taxes on it. And so what if it doesn't comply with zoning or platting? That's not my problem. I bought it that way, and so it's easier if those kinds of questions come up that I can talk about just what the code says, and we can answer their questions, but at the same time give them the right to comment, because I think Oliver's point is we're out there to listen to him.
Yes.
We want their comments. This is not really planning directed. It's more planning being the sponge. And we want to take information from them. And so I can try to answer some questions, but the focus should be giving them the opportunity to comment on our plan and changes that may need to be made or evaluated as a part of the EIS.
You're going to find this time to do this in between the bowling property.
Well, it's important enough that and those meetings happen at night, so yeah. I can do it in the evening. But I told Oliver that if we have another one, that I'll try to make myself available so that...
So what else can we do? Can we make sure that we have an amplification
legal
thing
stuff
there? Yeah. And then that people know that we're recording it or videotaping
it? You know, when you advertise it, it maybe what we can do is try to give a little bit more detail about what the purpose of the meeting is, what we're there to do, how it fits into the bigger picture of the process we're following, so that they understand what's going to happen and aren't misled. And then that might help in at least making sure that people know what we can do and what we can't do.
Scope of what we're talking about.
Exactly.
So one of the things, when I held that position and we were doing the 07 plan, when we got to a point and there was information that was summarized, I'll call it that, and what you put together was like a question and answer format, so you could ask a question, you know, what is the scope of this work? You could say, are 1 acre lots on the table? And then you could answer the question and then just, you know, and then give a reason for that answer.
Yeah.
So, like the 07 plan, actually the EIS was kind of formatted in a Q&A style format, so that it became more easily, it's easy to consume and understand. So when they get to that point where they're kind of summarizing some of this stuff, I don't know if they're going to go to that kind of format, but you can, it's that what is considered and what is not considered, so that they have a clear understanding.
And I think that's the problem, is that scope of what we're trying to talk about here, and he's getting everything under the sun. And if you can do that, and anything else that we could do to help with the good PA system.
Well, we may be talking to you about both having some kind of a portable PA system so that people can hear. It's important that they be able to hear what's going on, otherwise it's not productive. And then we'll work out the recording equipment, and then it's just going to be space. I mean, up till now, the public is pretty willing, and we municipal agencies work together pretty well about coordinating and sharing space, but often you get what's available.
It's hard. One time we have 5, 6, 8 people, and next thing you end up with 100 people.
Yeah, and so that is what I think Oliver found.
That's not our fault. I mean,
Holly did.
Well, and I believe there are copies of particular documents available for people to come in and look at. There are also comment forms for anybody to come in and get, but there's also an online comment form on the comprehensive plan update link on their homepage, on their part of the website. And I believe the little box where you make your comment is unlimited or something like 8,000 words or something.
I can't help but feel that so much of it is just not understanding. It is complicated. And somehow where our staff works on a daily basis, it's got to be brought back down to the simplest forms where people like myself can understand it. All right.
I got something on that, too. Chris, I like the idea of you being there. I go back to the 2012 Hawkinson High School. That had that big room, that gymnasium, certainly would accommodate any number of people. It's located out in the rural area, which would be very useful. I think it's very important that we better accommodate the questions and we can respond with answers. And if we do any advertising, that advertising would not only give them information about what to expect, it would point them to our website, and they wouldn't just make comments, but somehow we can accommodate their questions and then respond in writing so that it's more like a chat or an online question and answers, because they don't just want to throw their comments out there. They want answers. And it's very important that we differentiate between what the state law prevents or requires and what our county code freedom has. Sure. And it's important to know which is which. So
that was a good point. I like that.
And that's why Chris is going to be there.
This is
another suggestion.
But what we could do, we could accommodate that. In fact, if you put out a form and you have people fill out their questions, then it's a lot easier to put together in a question and answer format online.
Yes.
And you could make it part of your on-site, online process for the comp plan update.
Yes.
And then it'll give staff some time to answer them. Because as you know, some of these questions legitimately take some time to answer.
Mm-hmm.
And then the staff isn't put in a position where they're required to answer on the spot.
Exactly. And I expect that we need to make sure what we have online is a very useful resource. Because I expect that if we sort out and answer each one of these questions, that we'll find a pattern. Probably 50% or more of them will fall into a repetitive kind of question. And so we can make that a frequently answered question. Here's it is, and here's an answer. Maybe answer might be, if case A, then here's your answer. If case B, then here's your answer. So that it becomes more responsive. If people, they don't just want to be heard. They want to make sure that it makes a difference and that we accommodate them. So I hope that I want to work with you. I want to be able to work with Oliver and know that he's supported. But also make sure that the whole process serves the citizen, and I want to be there. I want to make sure that they have somebody who's accountable to them, who is available right there on the spot.
But David, you know the things that I sent you, that 5-page thing that I sent over here, had delivered to your office. If you look at that, you're going to see these emails and the questions were answered. You're going to see certain people's fingerprints on different peoples that are answering the questions. You'll see a pattern of somebody trying to get their point across by having different individuals either email or ask the questions at the public hearing that trying to aim at
drive the agenda.
Right.
The term you used was gaming the system.
Gaming.
When we were talking about that online town hall.
Right.
It's not an election. It's not a poll.
Right.
It's a question and answer. And if we have the same question answered or asked 10 different times, will you still lump it into here's that same question and here's the answer?
I understand all that.
There is room to what they're looking for.
But
is a leadership void to be filled, and I apologize to the citizens for not being there. It sounds like we need to be there.
One other thing the board has to consider, you mentioned Hawkinson. Be aware that part of the reason staff does these geographically is to spread it out and make it as convenient as possible.
Yes.
If you always pick the big place, it's not always going to be the convenient place. So sometimes you choose between, do you want it close or do you want it big? And you can't always have the same, especially have both.
Sure.
Especially right now because basketball is going on, and girls and boys basketball suck up all the local schools at night.
So great. Volleyball, indoor volleyball, all kinds of stuff.
Volleyball's almost over. Wrestling's starting.
Sure.
I can tell you. I've been there.
Okay. Mr. Administrator, do you have anything for us?
No, sir.
Oh, my God.
Oh, here you go.
So I'm not going to let Marty out of here this easy. Marty, how's Oliver Vineyards doing?
Which one?
How are they doing?
That's another half hour.
I thought that was the name of a vineyard. Oliver?
Haven't heard of that one.
Oliver, you opened the vineyard. good question. question. We've had some follow-ups with Rusty Grape. I think they've got maybe one inspection to do. Moulton Falls got their revised CFO, I think Monday or Tuesday, certificate of occupancy.
They're done?
They're done, to my knowledge. Right. Yeah.
Celebrate that one.
Right. Celebrate?
I'm not sure about...
it's a winery.
Heisen House, I'm not sure about. We did meet with a fellow named Ralph Greer with Lucy's Garden, which is in the Richfield area.
Uh-huh.
He has some... a couple inspections and a fire alarm system. So we're all tracking to the end of next week, which is the 14th, the deadline I gave them. As long as these people don't change their operation, then I think we're going to be good to go.
That's great.
What a fight. Yeah.
It has been a struggle along the way. We give you kudos for that because you had to deal with each one individually.
They're all different time frames.
You did great making them toe the line and make those improvements and come into compliance. And that was our intent.
The one thing I'll give you a heads up on is I believe, and I know Lucy's Garden operator, they may be coming to you about the noise standard.
I think
the board
heard something
adopted
about
the
that.
Noise standard mm-hmm. about the DBC rather than the DBA. Yeah. It has some material impact on some of the operations. So just a heads up on that particular aspect of the ordinance.
What I would suggest is that they contact us just individually so we have a more in-depth conversation with them.
Yeah.
Certainly point them to me.
The bottom line issue is that the night standard, if you remember, you reduced the DBC by 10. So it's below the state level, and the idea was to protect the neighbors.
Yep.
And that was all very intentionally done. The effect is that because of where this business is located, it's very close to Hillcrest and Royal Road, and there's one neighbor that they have that it's very difficult because the standard 40 dBA is certainly less than ITOC.
So
it's difficult to meet that standard if you have a wedding, even if you have low music. And so... Yeah. We've tried to encourage them to work with their neighbors. We've been out there on some weekends when they have events, and staff's been, I think, reasonably good at monitoring it. But there is that issue. So
we're about ready to wrap up.
Rusty Grape has the same problems.
And I had a conversation with him about that as well, and I suggested that he might want to get several of the winery operators in agreement on that before they come to the commissioners.
It's really important. We went there to that decibel level to allow them to operate because you can't go back and change the neighborhood in the rural setting when we really stretched out there to allow them, their businesses, to exist out there. So I don't think we have anything else.
Not tonight.
Thank you all. We are adjourned.
My Wednesday's mixed up.
So, a lot of these comments are not questions. No, they're just.
Oh, good.
These are permanent.
Because I wasn't going to make
it. All right.
They're not time consuming.
I did. Thank you.
They can be addressed easily. And Carol.
That's a web link. That's on our site, right?
Well, I appreciate you doing that.
Because I just said it was online.
Okay, sure.
Okay, great. And.